Hi, this is Mark Atkinson, and you're listening to the Cherry Jam podcast.
Hello, and welcome to episode 18 of Series 5, Cherry Jam. My name's Ed Price. I'm with Russ Brooks and James Eastwood, also known as Snowy, this evening. We will get on to the misery, pain and suffering that is the Gloucester Bath game and the ninth consecutive league defeat. But we start this week with something a little bit different. You guys, who are dear listeners, very kindly responded to a tweet I put out earlier asking for other topics we can chat about, some fun things, some interesting ideas. And you did deliver. We've got some lots of little things we can run through before we start getting onto that Gloucester Bath game. Thank you very much, guys, for joining me, Russ and Snowy. We're going to start with who would be the one Bath player that we would immediately take from the current Bath squad?
Please go first.
Go on, Russ. You go first.
I am torn because they annoyingly have a lot of quality, but I take De Toy just because what a tight head he is, and the stupid idiots have got him on the bench anyway, so they obviously don't want him. So
fair enough.
Come to us, and it'd be nice not to see him come on and put our pack on toast. But yeah, I've always rated him. I hate that he's there.
Yeah.
If not him, I'd have Van Velts from the back row, who always seems superb as well.
Snowy, yourself?
Finn Russell.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you compare the two, we've got the poor man's version.
Yeah.
This is true.
Come on. Yeah, I mean, to be fair, the Finn Russell one is the obvious one. He would be the person I would immediately just go, yeah. I mean, At international level, I think he has his doubts. I think he does try a few things maybe that don't work, and international level is so tight that you can't get away with it. But at club level, he's a different level to most tens out there.
Yeah, and Hastings isn't anywhere near that 10 shirt in Scotland team. So
no. There
you go.
No. Just from my point of view, there's a few players, annoyingly, as you said, Russ. I think Muir was, as a winger, I think is an excellent player, but I think wingers don't hugely influence the game normally. I like Miles Reid. I've always thought Miles Reid is a really good player. A bit like a Ludlow type in that he's kind of always there, but I think he's got a bit more quality, possibly. Sort of fringe of the England side, and seems to be indestructible. One of those players always seems to have a good game against us as well. So probably Miles Reid if it was me. We're going to try and just step away from Bath for a bit, just because it's painful as it is. This was a slightly off the wall one. The best pub in Gloucester.
The Regal.
This is a really good one to ask someone who now lives up north in the middle of nowhere and someone else who never goes out anymore.
I'm torn between the Regal and Chambers, but the Regal takes it.
Well, the Chambers is shut for a start.
I mean, you got the golden. Yeah.
Is that part of the redevelopment?
It's going to be something else. I don't know.
There's so much paving there. It puts Fred West to shame, really, doesn't it?
It does, yeah.
How are we overlooking the Golden Cross? The Nelson. There's some awful pubs.
Well, the Nelson's shut. This is the thing, Russ. This is showing
what's
the
one in? What's the Carvery in Hucklecote?
Cracking Carvery.
Oh, hang on.
It does say City Centre.
This is for Jim, really, isn't it? Jim could talk for two hours because he only drinks in the
about
how the Pelican is the best pub in Gloucester. Yeah,
the Pelly is very, very good.
It was set up so we could have all said every pub except that one, and just watch him get slowly more and more annoyed.
Yes, it's true. To be fair, the Pelly, I do enjoy the Pelly. I think it's a fantastic pub. The only frustration I do have with the Pelly is it's just a little bit too small inside. And the rugby season takes place during the worst months of the year in terms of weather. So you don't really want to be racking out the back in the beer garden. So that's slightly annoying. Also, was it the Claremont game? Or I don't know if it was a Claremont game. It might have been another game. We went in there once, Jim and I, after the game. And there was this couple playing an elaborate card game with, like, I don't know what you would call it, one of these elaborate card games, not a, poker game, but with characters and figures and stuff on one of the tables. which meant that no one else could sit on that.
Pretend you don't know what Warhammer is.
And they probably got there at 4 o'clock and thought their luck was in. There was no one in the pub.
Yeah. No, well, that's maybe what it was. But yeah, you couldn't bloody sit down. Anyway, that was slightly annoying. It is too small. To be fair, I would say that there's the new pub in the Keys. If people are coming down to Gloucester and they're not from here, the Hop Kettle.
Yeah, the Hop Kettle is nice. I've been there.
It's a nice pub. It's across a couple of levels. Good beer and really well located. But if you want the all fun of the fair and all the fun and games you get with a slightly dodgy pub in the middle of Gloucester, you've got North End Vaults, you've got the Imperial.
what's the Abbey called now?
The Abbey still. That's always a reliable one.
That's regenerated more times than fucking Doctor Who. It's just unbelievable, isn't it?
Yeah, but to be fair, the Abbey, it has a place. I'm not going to throw the Abbey to the side. There, it has its place. It's great for live sport. You know, if you want to watch football or rugby or whatever, it's a good spot. And they do have decent beer on every so often, and they always have one or two beers on which are half decent. So
is Robert Rakes still there?
The Robert Rakes is still there. It's one of those weird.
It's really nice inside and everything, but because it only does terrible Robert Rake beers as well, it's a bit odd there, isn't it? It's almost too quiet.
It's one of those. I'm trying to remember the chain. It's a particular chain that's.
Is it Samuel Smith's?
It is Sam Smith pub, and it is a very weird pub chain. Have some very weird idiosyncrasies around.
The brewhouse was quite good when they had Gamma Ray on tap. That was quite a good night that one time we had there.
Yeah, you have to remortgage every time you go there. That's the unfortunate thing. Tank's good again. That they, you know, if you want. Yeah. It's all right. I think they've stepped away from the silly beers, which was something that was their sort of their key little differentiator. They don't have the silly beers anymore. But look, if you come into town on a match day, you've got plenty of choice. If you really want to have a cheap night out, you can always go to the Regal, as Snowy said. It's always an option.
Start early, finish late.
Yep, exactly. Turk's Head, actually, which is just down the road from the Regal now, is another little weird idiosyncratic bar that they only take cash. There's no mobile phone signal. And it's kind of a weird little boxy thing. So again, lots of little weird places you can go to, and they all have their place. So moving on quickly, otherwise we'll do really sound just like alcoholics. If we'd won the Euro Millions, one of us had won the Euro Millions, and we were going to pay for one forward and one back to come to Gloucester, who would you bring in?
Dupont and Etzebeth. I just wanted to get in first.
You've actually made it easier, because if Snow is bringing them in, I'd sign Dupont, obviously.
Yep.
And he's signed Etzebeth. So I'll sign Aldrit in the pack. Because I've already signed a toy, so we don't need a tight head. I hadn't thought about backs, because Dupont's the obvious answer, isn't he? Mm-hmm. So let's have Jalibur.
Right, okay. Fair enough. I'm going to be controversial, because I can't.
No, there's a shock.
I'm going to say, in the backs, I'm going to say Owen Farrell. Because he's not going to play for England anymore, is he? And he's very, very good.
Yeah, but see, if
and he annoys the hell out of everybody else, so why can't we have him?
Whoa, let's go back to the question.
Yeah. But he's Euro Millions. We're going to have, you can afford anybody, right? But you want a player who's not going to go off into international duty, but is really, really good.
But if you've got a million, you also, like, this is, I was trying to think about all these questions as a whole of how to actually rebuild our shower of shit squad at the moment. And if you've got a million, I'd rather sign someone young rather than Farrell, who's, you know, let's be honest.
I'd have Dupont win 7 games for us and not play the rest of the season over Farrell.
Yeah.
I'd have Owen Farrell win 1 game for us at this point, but no. I'm being a bit facetious. But yeah, if seriously though, I would probably say Dupont's the obvious one, so I'm going to say Capuozzo, and I would say who's the big lad at? Oh Christ, what's he played? The All Black 8, the captain. I can't remember his name now. Not the one who got sent off, the one who stayed on.
Was it one of the Barretts? I don't know.
No. Hang on a minute.
Surveyor?
Yeah, Surveyor. Ardie Surveyor. Yeah, there you are. Surveyor. So I'd probably have those two. Right. Again, we'll crack on again. So if you could bring back any ex-Gloucester player to play in the current squad, who would it be and why?
James Simpson Daniel. Mainly because he's the best player to ever play for Gloucester.
Yeah, but Russ, and there's a big flaw in that call, because we've got really good wingers that don't see the ball, or at least
so
if they do
yeah.
See
but
the
you've
ball,
also got so you've got a player with some rugby brain power there. I have thought this one through. I was originally going to say Vickery because we need a tight end, but I've nicked a toy from Bath, so that's sorted. So the options would be right, Sinbad, because every time he breaks, he's then got the best nine in the world at spreading support lines. So he'll, you know, you're going to get DuPont's going to get about 10 tries off of him. And also a selfish point of view, if we're going to be shit, I'd rather have someone good who I enjoy watching, and other people can get bored of me going on about how good he is. And then we can spend the next 10 years saying it's a travesty, he isn't playing for England. All right. If we're saying Sinbad because we've got loads of good wingers, Jake Ball, so we've actually got a good captain.
I was a bit torn on if I think what sort of player I'd want someone with just a lot of run and bulk and size to pick up and get over the gain line. So I was sort of thinking back, like, which, if you said who was like the archetypal player, you'd probably have to go right back and go for like a Teague.
Yeah.
Now, of course, you wouldn't want Mike Teague playing today's rugby, but and that's always a difficult thing, isn't it? When you say, have you go back in time? So
yeah,
back in time, but suitable for playing today's game, then I'd go for Teague.
I was trying to think, similar to you, I was trying to think of a really nasty, big second row. And I don't think, I actually can't think of anyone we've ever had.
Like Peter Buxton or something was, he wasn't exactly class.
Just someone, because that's still, for me, the front five is, that's why I probably thought Vickery, is we lack big, nasty ball carriers. Also, the thought of Vickery and Val in the front row sounds quite good. But then
Ollie Azam then.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. And it'd suit us because they never play together, because one of them will be injured. So I'd pick someone like, another one would be Ludo, just because you might have a fly half who actually does the job well. But then
actually a lot to be said for Ludo in that side, because he doesn't need to pass to the backs.
No.
He can just win us games through kicking.
Yeah, just kick the point.
Which we could actually do with. Now that we could also, I mean, what are we on, our 13th scrum half this season?
Yeah.
So maybe a scrum half to settle things down as well.
Well, we've already binned off Thomas Williams by both picking DuPont. So, you know, he's had a good career for us.
Right, my go. To be fair, Snow, your point about having a big ball carrier, and you're right, that's the issue, isn't it? It's transporting somebody from back in the day into the modern game. But what we were assuming is they would have the benefit of all of the training techniques and all the rest of it. Yeah. So I would say, similar to you, I like Teague. That's a really good shout. I like Russ's point about Sinbad. I probably go Paramore for the same sort of reason as Teague. Maybe just, I like the idea of Paramore being, I mean, I didn't really see Teague play, so I can only go off my recollection of Paramore being a bit nippier and a bit more powerful over the sort of 20 yards. Maybe James Forrester is another one.
Do you know he'd be a good shout who I think would survive? He wasn't that far removed. I just sending forward, he's a bit left field. Mm. People don't know Gareth Delve. He's that kind of eight who I think would, he was a little bit ahead of his time. I thought he might have adapted quite well to the modern game. I always thought Delve was quite good. He wasn't in a great pack from what I remember, but he always was quite good at making go forward, which we do massively lack, don't we? For all the talents Mercer has, going forward off a retreating scrum is very hard work for someone like him.
Yeah, and that's why I think when we're setting these players talking about Gloucester's problems, you need people that can take back football and turn it into front football just because they're so physical and aggressive. And like, there's players, that's probably what I say maybe about Junior Palmer, is that like he needed a go forward team. There's quite a lot of players that look really good in team that's playing well.
Yeah.
Yeah. My initial answer to this was, and I couldn't find one when I Googled it, was to find something like, I'd just invest £1 million in like the Box Kickmaster 3000 that just is accurate 99.9% of the time with all box kicks, because ultimately that's all our scrum halves need to do under the game plan. Because sadly, all these questions assume we're stuck with the same coach and game plan. So let's face it, we just need a nine who can actually box kick and we might get something from it.
Diverged into the last game and the current fortunes of this awful Gloucester side.
Yeah, before we do that, there's one other final thing, and it's a good one. Again, it was sent a bit later on, and it was so Luke Littler has just won £200,000 in the darts at the World Championships. What would you, as a 16-year-old, have spent that money on?
Didn't we have this exact same question in like season one of this podcast?
No, we didn't.
Yeah, someone had won something else and this came up.
I don't think we did. I don't remember.
Anyway,
if it had,
what would
anyway,
as a 16-year-old
with £200,000, what would you have spent it on?
Probably PlayStation games. At 16, I'm not doing anything smart with it. Or chocolate, given how much of a fat fuck I was.
I think at 16, I'd have bought a box at Kingzone
for the season.
That's a shout.
When I was 16,
box.
I was obsessed with the rugby when I was 16.
Gone on a Lions tour or something.
Yeah,
I was obsessed with the Lions then.
Car. I'm not as obsessed with the Lions, but I would have loved to have done like a 16. Just going back to 16, I would have booked the 2003 World Cup. I would have said, I've just won £200,000, magically becoming very good at darts. I would have been 16 years old. That's 2000 out of 16. I'll bung money towards the World Cup in Australia and go and watch that.
Let's be honest, Ed, you'd have spent it on a Matt Letizier rug football shirt, signed one, and it would now be worth all of a fiver. So
I'd imagine 16-year-old Ed would have got some sort of convertible hairdresser car for £180,000.
And then £20,000 on the Letizia shirt. Yeah, exactly.
Jim would have bought a few more personalized number plates, I would imagine.
He would have cleaned up because he would have bought all the GL05 number plates. Yeah. All of them. That's right.
He'd have bought the old grandstand when it's demolished and just had it put into his back garden.
Over the road on that bit of park by the Spargo. And then Loz, what do you reckon Loz would have done?
An end to his virginity.
Loz when he was 16. Oh, God. How much hair had he lost at that point?
I don't know if the tech existed back then.
He'd have been on his way to Istanbul.
Turkey. He'd have been Turkey. Yeah, he'd have been Turkey, wouldn't he? To be fair. Bless him. I think it's very harsh. He can't defend himself. But, it's his own fault.
He doesn't listen
to the podcast now. Right. We are going to pause and we are now going to come on to the Gloucester Bath game. And the nine games, and the fact that I think we're now openly, openly calling for George Skivington to go.
Which, let's be honest, till now was everyone except you anyway, Ed.
I know, but I'm in control of the Twitter, so. Right, so after a record equaling run of form, George Skivington has gone one better, and Gloucester now have lost nine games in the league in a row. It statistically means that this Gloucester side are the worst professional Gloucester side. It's certainly in league rugby and in terms of the professional premiership era of Gloucester rugby. it's really difficult to sort of go through any overall positives outside of, I think there were some decent individual performances among an overall another loss.
I mean, that the thing is you got to think about, like, how many times have we won away at Bath over the years, right? It's all about context.
Yes,
and this is what some of our fellow Gloucester fans seem to struggle with sometimes, is that we've always said in this podcast, you don't take something in isolation. You don't take a loss in isolation. You don't take a win in isolation. You build a picture over a period of time. And what was bad about this loss was that it was the ninth consecutive loss. There were some good things in the performance. I thought we worked hard. We defended really well. And in a season where we're winning most games, you'd be like, we had chances to win it. We'll let that one go. It's always hard away at Bath.
But
there's only so many times you can say, like, plucky performance, lads. We just a few things go our way.
It's damning with faint praise, isn't it? And that was my fault. When the commentators were going, oh, you can't fault their effort and commitment and heart and defence, you're like, no, you can't. But it's a derby game, and that's the bare minimum I'd expect of any professional rugby side, is to do their best. You know, we all know no one goes out to play shit. I think what frustrated me was the tactics. Like, everyone was going, oh, it's really good, we're in the game at halftime. We didn't do anything in the first half. It was like the football equivalent, sorry, the rugby equivalent of parking the bus. We didn't put any pressure on Bath. It was a weird first half. The atmosphere was non-existent, which I know is not saying a lot at the Rec. They made some, they're like, Tom Dunn could not hit a cow's ass with a banjo. No. And the pressure actually came from their mistakes. And the try was a weird one. It was a well-worked move, but we kind of worked our way up there without really doing anything. And other than that, I can't think of a dangerous attacking move we made.
Well, until the end. Bath were poor as well. That's the
other thing. And that's what I mean. So Bath were poor, so I think it flattered to deceive us. We defended brilliantly at times. I'm not faulting that. And there were, like you said, some good individual performances. For Ackerman had a good game. But we didn't do anything. You cannot win a game of rugby by giving the ball, kicking the ball away all the time and saying to the other team, you make a mistake. You should want the ball in hand. You should want to be controlling your own destiny and trying to force something. The 71st minute was when we strung together our most phases in that game of rugby. And it wasn't a lot of phases. It was frustrating.
We've talked a lot about, like, kicking it away too much and stuff. And I think part of the issue is bigger than that, is that when we get the ball in a position where we're not kicking it away, i.e. we've had a good little counter-attack or someone's made some meters, is we cannot hold on to the ball.
No.
Like, we try and score off one phase of crazy rugby, and if we don't, we just shovel shit and give it away. And there was some absolutely... I mean, I don't care if anyone beats five players and makes 30 metres if the next thing they do is just flip a ball behind them blindly and it rolls on the floor and one of the opposition players picks it up.
Exactly that, Snow. Ball retention is key. You make a good break. If it's not on, take it in and recycle. At least then you're in a good position. Our decision-making is poor, and that, I don't know how we were in a position where we could have come out of that game with a draw, but the phase of play and the tweet by Gloucester that described what happened is what you would get if you asked ChatGPT to describe Gloucester's game plan, because it's something like, Hastings throws the ball out badly, ball goes back 15 meters, turnover, penalty to Bath, and that to me, it just summed us up, didn't it? I never for a minute believed we were going to win. You just couldn't. I had no confidence that we could capitalize on that. It blows my mind that we were somehow in a position to come away from both the Harlequins and the Bath game to win something. And it's a weird one that people are going, oh, we were in those games, but I don't think we deserve to be. I don't think that's a valid point, because I don't know how, I cannot explain to you how we were in a position to get anything from those games. It wasn't down to us.
So it feeds into a couple of things that Snowy and Russ, you both mentioned the defence. Now, one of the criticisms of the last couple of months has been goal line defence is non-existent. Basically, if you get in 22, you're going to score. I think to the credit of the players, and I'm not going to, I don't know enough about the coaching systems specifically, but to the credit of the players, and I think we have to say even Don Waldock on the coaching side, the scramble defence and the goal line defence has improved. I'm not going to disagree with that. It has improved over the last 3-4 weeks. The problem isn't necessarily the goal line defence now. It's the fact that we're letting the teams get into that position in the first place. It's far too easy to get to our edge. I mean, literally, it's 2 passes, 3 passes, and you're behind us. Now, I don't know. I haven't kind of watched enough of it to work out potential causes of this, but my gut is I think the centre partnership is wrong. I think I can't work out if it's a pace thing, if it's a communication thing, but there seems to be a bit of disconnect in the centres, which is causing issues out wide and causing issues inside. That's my gut, just looking at it and seeing these gaps appear.
Is that Atkinson then? Because with the other Atkinson and Harris, and with Hastings there, they had a really good setup for a period.
I think the problem with Seb Atkinson is I think he lacks a bit of pace. And I think that's causing an issue where if one player goes, he isn't quite connecting as well as he could do. When Llewellyn plays, I do think we look a bit more cohesive in defence.
I know. It's annoying that Llewellyn doesn't start a bit more.
Understand that at all.
No, yeah, that's a weird one.
We didn't bring him in to play second fiddle to...
No, exactly. And I don't want to throw Seb Atkinson under a bus because he was very good last year and he was young. But I think he's not there yet, is he? And I think that's part of the problem is that a lot of these young lads... they're playing a lot of game time and they're now being exposed and there's no one backing them up anymore, is there? We lack a lot of nous and experience. Now, I find frustrating because there are experienced players in there, but for me, it still goes back to that lack of a cohesive leadership.
And who's the captain? Yeah.
I go back to that. We lack a captain. Someone called us out, I think, about the kicking stats, and I think they made a valid point. It's not just about the kicking. Our kicking's poor, but kicking is only as good as the chase and what you do when you're in the field position you get from the kicking. We lack ball carriers. We were so static at times. You could just see people walking onto the ball. There's no aggression in what we're trying to do going forward. No one's looking for an offload because no one believes there's going to be anyone there on their shoulder.
No one's reading that break. When someone makes a line break, everyone's 5 meters behind because they're not expecting a line break.
Yeah, I know, and you know, taking a jokey thing to see if, that's why I think we're all picking people like, yes, DuPont's the best, but that's why I'd have someone like Sinbad. You talk, Snow, about our wingers not getting the ball, he would go looking for work, or he just would get on someone's shoulder or make a gap or read it. We lack we have hung the coaches out to dry a lot, but the players aren't playing well at the moment. A lot of players are lacking confidence, not trying. Hastings,
Just coming on to that point about the players, because I think, you know, Hastings got a lot of stick at the weekend. I think, to be fair, legitimately for how that moment at the end of the game, that's your moment where you need to be on your game. You need to make those plays, right? But I think that's a fair, criticism of Hastings. But what I would say is that none of the players are not... But you can clearly see they are desperate to win. They're desperate to make these plays. They're desperate to change the situation as it is. I just think the coaches are not giving them the opportunity to do that.
Yeah, that's exactly...
So
I think
coming on to... Sorry, Russ, just I want to pass this to Snow first, then come back to you. So, Snow, on that point about the fact that we go on and on about the game plan, and I think, quite rightly called us out on the kicking stats, which gets brought up a lot. But I don't think it's the kicking anymore. It's part of it, but it's the defense.
I don't even think it matters specifically whether it's what's being said to them. This is the way you're going to approach it. The fact is, a team with this much individual talent in it that has lost 9 games in a row in the league means that whatever the coach is trying to do He hasn't got the buy-in. He hasn't got people singing off the same hymn sheet. You know, there's many different ways to play the game of rugby. And if you get a good team, you can play well with that good team in many different ways if they're well coached. And how many times have we seen pretty average sides do really well because they've been extremely well coached? Take Exeter in their first few seasons in the league. Like, you could see they were just a unit that was extremely well coached. When you look at this Gloucester side, it's clear as day that they're not well coached, because yes, you can end up in a situation where you've got players that aren't getting on or they're not quite connecting properly and everything. But the role of a coach is to understand where those things aren't working and then solve it. And he's had a long period of time now with loads of good players at his disposal. And there haven't even been shoots. Like, the closest thing we get to a shoot is a good performance in a game that we've lost, or a sneaky win where we still played pretty badly. Like, there is never under his coaching tenure been a run of where you can say you could see something developing here.
Yeah, I think that's the point I wanted to clarify. I wasn't going to throw the players under the bus at all. It is very hard to play and play confidently and expressively in a system you have no confidence or self-belief in, or if you're badly coached. Local level, I've played for teams where I know we're going to be made to play in a way that is really hard to care about or be excited by. You're losing week in, week out. It is hard mentally. Whatever people say, this is Gloucester, you should play for the badge, you should play for the shirt. When you're in a rut, it's hard mentally to lift yourself, and you're looking for people to galvanize you to step up and speak. And when I hear George Skivington speak, it is like blah 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 blah. When Van Gaan or whatever the Bath coach was speaking after the game, the mid interview, he was really insightful. They're like, are you worried about being stuck in this rut? Have you taken it complacently? He's like, no, it's not at all. This is a moment of pressure. The guys will rally around there, get it together. He was very calm, articulate. You're not expecting them to give it a lot of way. When I hear George Skim, it sounds like a little boy lost. It's like the Harlequins one. I nearly threw my remote at the telly when he's like, well, Marcus Smith is just cutting us to pieces. And you're just thinking, you're the coach. Do something about it. Yes, it's Marcus Smith. Yes, he's doing something brilliantly. But you've had all week to prepare for that. Put some pressure on him. You know, it's not, that's where my frustration is. You can, the players are not playing well, but they're on the coach's watch. He's recruited them. This is his squad, which is all we've all said he needed that. He's got it now. There's no hiding place for this coaching team. And also, I think someone said to you, Ed, the attacking coach needs time. We're in January. I haven't seen any sign of an attacking game plan strategy.
The attacking structure is panic at about 70 minutes because we are a score or two scores behind. That's fundamentally the attacking structure we have. Now, that might be because George Skivington is particularly onerous in terms of, he says, this is the way we're going to play. And Mr. Lightfoot Brown, you are allowed these things within the certain parameters. I mean, offset phase, we're not bad, actually. We create some nice little patterns offset phase, off a scramble or a line out, if we don't kick it. But how many times this season have we seen those nice little set plays? There's been some decent rugby off the set play, which is what you expect. Just on that point though, Snowy, the point about the Russ made about the it's Skivington's squad now, there is no hiding place, and this is kind of where we land onto on about the Twitter and thing and sort of saying that he has time, it has to be now, he has to go. It's fundamentally, it's gone too far now. But every single player in that squad, with the absolute, and I'm being really kind, the caveat that Louis Rees-Sammet would be on an academy going into a full-time contract, and therefore, I think in terms of timings, may not have been a George Skivington re-signing. But let's be honest, you wouldn't not have Louis Rees-Sammet.
I mean, he'd have to be bad to have said, nah, not him.
No, not him. So every single player in this squad, Snow, is a player that has either signed for George Skivington or has re-signed for George Skivington.
Yeah, but I don't think we've got a poor squad. I say this every time I'm on the pod, and I was just flicking through the Bath squad when we're talking about which players we'd have. And I think if you compare squad to squad, yes, they've got a few standout players. Like, that's the great thing about the Premiership is every team can have a few standout players. But squads for squad, I don't think I'd take their squad over our squad.
It was only, was it two seasons ago we put the record win on them and put them to the pump?
Yeah.
They haven't changed.
A lot of consistent players between the two squads.
They haven't changed a lot then. And what frustrates me is seeing some of the fan base want to stick with it. Bath were ruthless then. They were very similar to where we are now. They had a coach who was young, well-regarded, was trying quite hard.
Yeah, the fan base, a proportion of the fan base really liked him and he came across as a really nice guy.
But he was clearly out of his depth. And look at how much it's paying dividends to them now. And when people say, should we keep, you've got to make that decision sooner or later. And the one I find really tedious is people saying, well, we don't want to go for a rebuild again. What the hell do they think we're going to do? We're ninth in the league out of 10. That is a step backwards. We are going to have to, even George Skivington has to rebuild from this point. Something has to change. And to say that we're not going to have to change is putting your head in the sand. And just
on that note as well, like, I want to call out some of the social media gatekeeping that's going on at the
minute. That's driving me the wall. You're
only a real fan if you get behind the team. We're not getting behind the team. Like, it's supporting a team includes the reason we're passionate about this is because we support the team.
Because we care.
We spend a lot of time getting into the nooks and crannies of what's going on. How in 3 years' time can we be back fighting at the top of the league?
Yeah.
And so the reason we're passionate about it is because if we carry on just saying it's fine because they're all representing the club and trying their hardest, dear, then we're not going to see an improvement here.
No. It's a bit like looking at the kamikaze pilot who didn't quite get it right last time and go, give him another chance because he'll get his eye in this time. It's not going to happen. It's just, that's the problem. And we all care. Sometimes I think if people saw how much we get worked up on the pod, we all rant, but if you saw how annoyed or how happy we get in the WhatsApp chat, I want us to win. I was sort of jumping off the sofa with joy when we scored the try, thinking, God, we might actually be on to something here. None of us want to be miserable. There's enough shit going on in the world. I'd quite like our rugby team to do well, to be honest.
So there's a few things that Snowy's made the point about the social media gatekeepers, and there's been a couple of these, and I just want to expand on a couple of things. Now, look, everyone has the right to say whatever they want to say and express their opinions in any way they want to express it on social media. So he's absolutely right that the frustration for a lot of people who are fed up with this is that if you say that sort of thing on these social media sites, you'll get told, oh, well, you're not a proper supporter because you're not backing the lads. Sorry, that's, as Snowy's very eruditely said, that's nonsense. The other thing I get frustrated by is it's around there's a few things that kind of go back to is who would we get in? Well, why are you asking five lads on a social on a podcast who the next coach of Gloucester should be?
Now we could talk about people that are, we could spend 20 minutes talking about people that are at jobs that we'd like to see come in, but really that's not really the point.
No, the point it isn't, and my argument as well is it doesn't. Like, I don't even think it has to be in inverted commas big name. You look across the league, and there are plenty of people in positions within the league who I wouldn't say are particularly experienced coaches or weren't experienced coaches when they got the
Saints.
Job.
Saints, yeah, Saints I mean, are top, and that coaching setup is not that much. Bath was hardly a house. Van Gaan's hardly a household name. Very good, very highly regarded, but it wasn't like they went all shit or bust with a real big name, I think that...
To me, the whole thing about this, it comes down to style of rugby. So where do you, as a side and as a club, what do Gloucester want to be known for? Now, I have no problem if they say, do you know what? We want to go back to the basics. We want to have the most nasty, horrible pack in the history of rugby. And the winger basically could be, as we've often said, a wheelie bin on a rope, because they'll never get the ball other than on the odd occasion that someone kicks to them. All right, that's fine. I have got no problem. If that's the identity that you want to develop, fine.
I also think it's an attractive proposition to come and coach Gloucester.
Yes, it is.
Because I think we're pretty financially sound, from what I can tell. We've got a decent squad with lots of young players and plenty of sort of easy enough to work out where there's opportunities for improvement, and everything seems to be set up quite well on that side of things. And you can only do better. as a coach, that's literally the perfect...
And the fan base will be on your side for all eternity, it seems. You know, they're very patient.
Yeah. You can lose 47 games in a row, but as long as the boys are still trying.
Yeah, and the final thing I just want to reference just before we go is, and I've seen it a few times, and I do understand the sentiment. You know, we've gone through a period of time in rugby in England where we've lost three clubs. In the Premiership, we've lost Jersey in the Championship. And there's this understandable sentiment from a proportion of supporters to say, we should be just grateful that we've got a club to support. Right, I'm not saying that's necessarily wrong. What I'm saying is that that's fine for a year, right? When everyone has fallen apart and you as a club, you just as a supporter base, you're just thinking, thank Christ, that's not us, right? Totally get it. But that can't continue. At some point, you have to accept that the club is a professional rugby club and their entire existence is based on winning rugby games. It's not based on just being a thing. We have to win rugby games. We have to be a successful rugby club for us to exist. That's how we maintain our existence. That's how we maintain the next 150 years. Not by just simply going, well, at least we didn't build a stadium or cock up by doing a share offer we have to get past this weird mental block that some people have got. Yes, it's great we have a rugby club, but we want to have a rugby club that is successful, not just simply existing.
And the business side and the playing side, of course, they are linked to an extent. If you're doing well, you get more fans, etc. But they're managed in separate ways. And making sure that the club survives is having really good management who make good commercial decisions. And that's got nothing... That it's not a good commercial decision. I think it's clear as day to keep a coach that's losing every single game.
Yeah. Yep. And that equally, you know, that goes on in the long term, doesn't it? We are all prepared. We're all big enough. We've seen it happen with the club. If you lose players because you can't afford to keep them in the climate, that's part of it, isn't it? But at least let's be honest about that. You know, there are, particularly with how we are at the moment, there are loads of players who, if they go, can you blame them?
No. Sorry, Russ, you've just drawn my attention to something, and I think it's really important. We haven't really got time to do it tonight, so we will make sure we do this next week. So it's literally, as we're recording this evening, on the Monday evening, it's just been announced that JPR Williams has passed away. Simply put, one of the greatest rugby players of all time, an absolute legend. We will 100% go into detail about how good this guy was and the importance he has in terms of rugby as an icon, as a player. Really, really sad news this evening as we record. Thank you very much for bringing my attention to that, Russ. And Snowy, I'll let you get back to decorating. Russ, warm up because you're cold in your office at the moment. Thank you both. Cathartic as always. Speak soon.
Yeah, cheers, guys.
Cheers, guys.